VorpalNetwork.com.
This episode of The Tome Show is brought to you by Noble Knight Games, where Out of Print is available again. And listeners like you, thanks for using the Tome's Amazon store.
Hi, this is Chris Sims. I used to work for Wizards of the Coast, but I've been reskinned as a freelancer. And you're listening to The Tome Show.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 161. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interview show, and I'm your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, it's time to get a bit meta and talk about the show, as well as review some of the things that have happened in the last year in D&D. So in this episode, we're going to spend some time talking a bit about the show. Over the 3 years that I've been doing the show now, I've never really taken the time to talk about what the podcast is and why I do some of the things I do and how it's formatted and on and on and on, all those sorts of things. So I thought, it's a new year, why don't I take the chance to learn a little bit about some of those kinds of things? And while we're at it, we'll take some time to, in the second half, to talk about some of the exciting news and discussions and things going on both in this show and what's coming up in the future with it, as well as looking back at the last year in Dungeons & Dragons, seeing what happened in 2010 of the game we all love. So, the first big bit of news, there's two real big announcements today. The first one is that from now on, you can stop hearing me talk by myself a lot. Although, well, that's not quite right anyway. But anyway, moving on, what the announcement is that I'm bringing on a regular co-host. I've been doing the show a long, long time now, and the only consistent voice has been myself. And I've occasionally thought how nice it would be to have some help in organizing things and handling some of the behind-the-scenes parts of the show. So today, I am going to announce that I have decided to bring a new person onto the show. This person has been on the show a lot, so it won't be too much of a change for most of you listening out there. So I want to welcome to the game, Tracy Hurley.
Woo! Thanks, Jeff.
So Tracy's going to be the new official Tome co-host, which should open up lots of potential for things. It'll help me sort of keep up a good pace and keeping new episodes coming out. And she's got some mad web skills that I don't possess, so maybe that'll mean some cool things in the future too.
That would be awesome.
So let's take some time and learn a little bit about Tracy. So I'm going to do a quick little interview. We'll call this your job interview, and if it goes poorly, maybe I'll just fire you before you get started.
Oh God, the pressure's on. I am from a small town, Marlboro, New York. That's where I spent most of my childhood. More apple trees and people, but not too far, about an hour and a half north of New York City. So in Hudson Valley, beautiful place. I miss it a ton, but that's where I'm from.
All right, now you're in the Boston area?
I am in the Boston area.
And you do all kinds of interweb work?
Yes, I am a senior developer. I code mostly in Perl, but I also do the front-end JavaScript, HTML, CSS stuff when necessary. And it's been necessary lately, so a little tired.
So that all sounds very nerdy, but
yeah.
But where does your geek life start? Where do you start getting into this whole world that leads you to D&D?
Well, my parents were geeks before, I guess, it was cool or something. We had video games like my entire childhood. My dad was very big on the Intellivision, and my mom as well, and the Atari and all those things. So that's where it all started. I started programming back then too. Always been around a lot of very geeky people, but I resisted the siren call of D&D until, you know, just under 2 years ago, and I started playing.
So did your parents play D&D? Did they ever try to get you to play?
They didn't play tabletop D&D. My mom played an Intellivision game that is, you know, based on Dungeons & Dragons IP, Treasures of Tarmin. My brother was a huge second edition player, and we would spend weekends at the library. He would research old weapons and try to show it to me and try to explain what he was doing to make it part of the game and whatnot. But I never got bit with the bug back then. It was cool, and I was more than happy to help him, but I just wasn't. I spent my time reading about geography and history and Trail of Tears and all that stuff. So I was still a geeky, but I just didn't play.
Right on. I can put myself back into that age and remember that the idea of weapons was always a draw to the game, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And maybe that was a boy thing, but you weren't, as I understand it, you weren't exactly a girly girl either.
No, I played a lot of sports, and all of my friends were guys. I was a big tomboy. I constantly would get yelled at by the teachers that I wasn't being feminine enough or whatnot. It was just a phase, but whatever, I showed them. It was a different time too. But yeah, no, I was definitely a tomboy growing up.
Okay, so you resisted the siren call of D&D and focused your attention on more intellectual pursuits, it sounds like. Is that
fair? Yeah, a fair bit of that, and, you know, and sports and stuff. And I think the other thing is just, at that time, it's kind of, at that age, an awkward thing for sometimes to get involved in. 'Cause the guys aren't mature enough yet.
That's probably fair. I'll own that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I wish I had had a group of guys where I could have just hung out like I do now, but I didn't. So that was probably one of the biggest reasons why I just didn't get into it.
All right. So 2 years ago, you finally succumbed to the siren call after living life and doing your thing and getting your education and getting married and moving to Boston and doing in whatever order that all happened. And then 2 years ago, you end up getting back into D&D. How does that happen?
Well, I listened to the podcast from Wizards and with the Penny Arcade and people, and I was happy that they didn't roll a ton of dice. That was, like, always one thing that bugged me when my friends played, was, like, everything came... It felt like a lot of things just came down to dice rolls, and it wasn't as fun. Like, they were very... Most of my friends were very serious about D&D, and that wasn't me. So the fact that these guys just had fun with it was great. And then on top of it, we'd been hosting my husband's gaming group for a while, and they really just needed another player. And I was like, you know what? I'll give it a try, and we'll see what happens. And, well, now we know what happens. The rabbit hole.
So explain this to me.
Okay.
You don't play D&D.
Yeah.
You had been around it, but never been that into it for years and years and years and years. How the heck do you end up listening to the official D&D podcast?
You know, I honestly can't remember. I think I had started... I was on Twitter already, but as my own personal account, not as Sarah Dark Magic. And I think some of my geeky friends from the tech world were talking about it, and like, this is so cool to listen to. I had been reading the Penny Arcade comic, I think, a little bit, as well as PvP, and I just, for some reason, decided to listen. I know it's really strange. I know it was
serendipity.
Yeah, and it was I introduced the rest of the gaming group to the podcast, so it wasn't like it didn't go the other way. I introduced it to them, so yeah, it was just one of those events that happens.
So that's crazy. So now this is a typical question I ask guests when they come on, but I don't know that I've ever asked you on air, so to speak, anyway. And I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this, but tell us about your first character.
Well, my first character was Sarah Dark Magic. I decided to... I know that a lot of people will get into gaming because of Lord of the Rings, and they'll name their character after someone in Lord of the Rings. But Lord of the Rings wasn't what spoke to me. It was this podcast. So I was like, this is how I'm going to pay homage to the podcast and it getting me to try it out. So that's how I ended up with the name. And I actually just really... It was a half-elf because she had to be part human in order to be a cousin. And just went with it. It was a rogue, half-elf rogue, multi-class warlock. And I think I started at 4th level because that's where the guys were already in the game.
So this is Sarah Dark Magic of the New Hampshire Dark Magics.
Yes.
Okay. And as I understand it, that character then evolved into a whole setting as you became a DM.
Yeah, so when I created her, I was very nervous about acting out a character at the table and doing silly things. So I made her very much like me, but just with some tweaks, like I'm sure lots of people do. And then the people at the table they seemed to really like her. And then they started asking, well, like, where is she from? Because they knew I'd come up with a lot of this stuff. So then it was like...
And they hadn't heard the podcast.
Well, at this point, a bunch of them had. But I mean, in the podcast, like, there are some things, like the owls. Owls are a big thing in my Newhamshire because of the podcast and everything.
Right.
So yes, I just built up this world, and when I took over DMing duties, they're like, "Hey, why don't we figure out where Sarah's from?" And that's how it started. So I created this whole land.
So talk a little bit about that transition to going from a player to becoming a DM and doing it all within what, your first year of really being into the game?
It was closer to like within 6 months I was DMing. The guys playing really helped me want to try playing. But to be perfectly honest, it was the DM in the podcast that made me want to DM and to really, really play D&D. I was like, from the very beginning, that's what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to DM. I wasn't confident that I could do it, like, particularly story-wise. You know, I'd never done anything like that before. So I was very nervous. But it was great. Having the Twitter community available really helped. And also blogging about my experiences. People who read those early blog posts know that I wasn't very confident. And there was a lot of like, I don't know if I'm doing this right. Or I'll just post an idea and people will be like, wow, that's so cool. You know, I'm going to use this in my game. And that just really helped feed my confidence and help me make that step to becoming a DM and to writing more and becoming more involved in the community.
So your big advice to anybody who's a new DM is that they should start a blog.
They can try. I think starting a blog is good because it also just help you. I leave a lot of my notes in there, things that I don't remember. So it's a good thing to go back to. And yeah, just blogging and being on Twitter and getting feedback from other people. Because one thing I've noticed, at least in my groups when I DM, the players don't like to tell you things. Because sometimes they're afraid of hurting your feelings, or it's just awkward for them. But if other people who aren't invested in your game are more than willing to share their thoughts, both good and bad, about what you're doing. And to be honest, it's been mostly good. So
within 2 years, you started playing the game, became a DM, started a blog, became the co-host of the greatest D&D podcast ever made.
Right.
I think you're done now. You've pretty much won life, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, and then between that and like in April, the first thing I've helped write should be published in print. Like it's been a crazy, and it hasn't even been 2 years yet. So I'm a little overwhelmed by it, and you know, just very grateful and humble for everything that's happened. I just can't believe it. It's great.
It does sort of make the rest of us feel really unaccomplished, though.
No.
You know, some of us have been playing D&D, let's see, I started when I was 8. I'm 31 now. You know, and you've accomplished a lot in the industry, so to speak, in your 2 years that I haven't done in a lot more than 2 years.
But, I mean, yeah, okay, I've done a fair bit. I can't deny that. I think there's just, you know, it's just hard because I think there's a lot of opportunity for people to do it. But it's just, I think it's easier if you're new. It's just a different mindset. Like, I don't know how to explain it. One of the problems I see sometimes is just people want official. They want things to come from someone official. And they're very afraid to say what they want to say because they're not official. And I think you should just say it. And if it comes from your heart, I think people will tend to respond well to it. At least that's how I feel.
Well, good. And you've had some pretty good luck and pretty good success with that. And now you've reached the pinnacle of your success because you can't really get much better than being a host on The Tome Show. So,
right.
I think we can probably move on from there. Unless there's anything else you want to say to your new audience. I mean, new audience in as much as you've been on, you know, 70% of the last probably 15 or 20 podcasts, but
I know. I'm hoping that people don't tire of me too soon. I think there's a lot of cool stuff we can do together.
Well, I don't think they'll tire of you. Any of the feedback I've had about having you on has been positive, and they've been listening to me for over 3 years now. So if they tire of you, they're probably not listening anymore because they tired of me a long time ago. All right, so I think we'll go ahead and let you stick around for a little bit, and I will be glad to have some help as we progress through things, and hope that makes life a little bit easier for me, which is going to become important because come July, I am having my second child. So along with that goes the second big announcement for the episode, and the second bit of news to discuss for the Tome Show and what's going on. And I'm going to commemorate the event of my second child's birth with the return of the Tome Show's annual contest. And to make matters even better, I'm pretty much putting Tracy in charge of running it.
Woohoo!
So, Tracy, tell us about the Tome's 2011 New Life Contest.
Okay. Well, between me joining and your upcoming baby, we have a lot to celebrate. So we thought we'd get together with some great companies to award some prizes to our listeners. The big thing is we have three prize packs, right, for the end of the contest that's going to end in July.
Yep, there's a first, second, and third place.
First, second, and third place. Right now, we're still discussing it with some other companies, but we have Noble Knight giving some gift certificates, Gnome Stew's Eureka, and Sly Flourish DM's Tips book as the main prizes. $35 gift certificate from Noble Knight for first, $20 for second, and $10 for third. And then on top of it, we're going to have some smaller monthly giveaways. Right now, we have Noble Knight gift certificates for that, $5. And to enter each month, we'll have two topics, one in our forums, and then the other in the Tome Show Bizline. And if you contribute to both of them, you'll gain an entry in the main contest. And we'll pick monthly winners from those that enter in a particular month.
All right. So the trick is you have to post to the forums and in the official contest thread that I'll create. And you have to call into the Tome's biz line. So you're going to participate in our show-based conversation, plus you're also going to contribute to the show and possibly end up on it. And if you do both of those things, then you get entered for that month. And it goes from January to, well, we'll make the drawing in July.
Right.
Because theoretically, that's when my child will be born. So you can enter once a month by doing those two things, and every entry gives you a better chance to randomly have your name drawn out and win a fabulous prize. Noble Knight, Gnome Stew, and Sly Flourish are the current prize sponsors, but I have four or five others that I've already talked to and have basically said yes, and we're just sort of finalizing what it is that they're giving. So keep listening, and you will be hearing more prizes on there, and it should just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And I know in the past we've given away hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth of prizes. And I don't expect these prize packages to be any less fabulous.
Yeah, I think they're going to be really awesome. I'm eligible still, right?
No, you're not.
I know. Just joking.
Too bad for you.
Oh, man.
We should tell people what the first, how to enter this month, since we've just announced.
Right. So this month, we have two topics. The first one for the forum, post your favorite D&D event of 2010. And then the second one, when you call the bizline, call in with your thoughts on Gamma World.
Okay, because I think we're going to talk about Gamma World next month. Was that the plan? Whenever the third product comes out. Well, it was either next month or March. And then we'll talk about Gamma World and all three of the products at the same time. And so we'd like to hear some of your thoughts on Gamma World since two of the products are out. That'll give you a chance to call into the Tome's Biz line. That's 919-BIZ-TOME. You can call in and give us your thoughts on Gamma World and post over at the forum, which I'll have linked in the show notes. And you can tell us what did you really like about D&D in 2010, and we'll have a bit of a conversation about that. So, I've put Tracy to work answering some questions and explaining some things. Now I'm going to test her interviewing skills, or your test to see if you're going to make it as a co-host continues. And to test your interviewing skills, I'm going to have you interview me. And you're going to find out about myself, you're going to find out about the show, and all the other things that you've wondered about the Tome. So, right. Tracy, take it away.
So this is like the Tome Show skill challenge for me.
Totally your skill challenge.
Sweet.
You've got two failures already, and I'm not even going to tell you what they were.
Oh, no. Can I buy some back?
It'll cost you an action point.
Okay. Sweet. So I guess it's now a tradition that whenever I interview someone, I get to ask them how they get started in D&D. So, Jeff, how did you get started? I know you talked about it a little earlier.
Yeah, but we... Oh, no, I did mention that was on the air, wasn't it? When I was 8, I was at my friend Derek's house, as we often were, because his parents were never around, and that makes his house more fun. And so we were hanging out there, and his older brother had a bunch of D&D stuff and had been playing with him, and then he wanted to play with me, and so I... like, all right, that sounds like fun, because Derek was sort of the leader of our little gang of friends back then. So if he said it was a good idea, we did it most of the time. And so I rolled up I think it was a half-elf ranger. I know he was a ranger. Named Sharonic Brightblade. And his first adventure out, I'm assuming we just mangled the rules, because his first adventure out, he already had a cadre of probably half a dozen followers. This was second edition AD&D, and we went out and killed a dragon. That was my first experience with D&D, was running out with a brownie and a pegasus and all kinds of things at my beck and call, and we killed a black dragon.
Nice.
And then right afterwards, he left, and I was doing some things with the character sheet, and I was obviously instantly hooked, because I ran into the other room and came to a skidding halt, my little 8-year-old self, on the carpet next to him, and said, "Hey, Derek, give me 3,000 experience points," because that's how much I needed to level, and I was really excited about leveling, so... And I've pretty much been playing since then, for better or worse, because it was one of those things that was not accepted in the household. I didn't actually own my own books until I was old enough to drive, and then I went into the city, because I grew up in a small town, and we went into the city, and I bought my first books, and then I brought them home, and I taped up the top of the cover so you couldn't actually see where it said Dungeons & Dragons, so that my parents would never see it. And I still have those books.
Nice. Books seem to be a big thing. I have a bunch of my brothers, and I've been reading through the older books so that I have an idea when I talk to people about what they're talking about, which is always nice.
I've lugged those books all over the country at this point, and I haven't used them since we switched to 3rd edition. And I still have all my 3rd edition books, which I've barely looked at since I switched to 4th edition. I pull them out every now and then. Oftentimes for a reference, because I'm running a Forgotten Realms game and I want to pull out some old Forgotten Realms books to see what it was like back in the day. But
right.
I barely pull that stuff out anymore, but they're all on the shelf with all my other books.
I love books anyway.
Yeah.
So talking about information, I know you said about... How long have you been doing the Tome Show? You said 3 years?
It's been a little more than 3 years. I started in October.
Okay. So why did you start the Tome Show?
I started the Tome Show because I wanted there to be a show like the Tome Show. I was getting at a point in my life where I was tired of listening to the radio. Music was starting to drive me crazy because it was the same 10 songs over and over again, and you had to listen to 7 hours of commercials to hear those songs. And it just drove me nuts, and I was looking for, I'm like, if I'm spending all this time in the car driving to and from work, I'd like to hear some conversation. I'd like to better myself. And so I started listening to talk radio, and that didn't really do anything for me. And so I finally got my first iPod, and then started listening to podcasts on my drive. And that did, that was perfect, because I could find the stuff that I wanted. And I could listen to the stuff that I wanted. And there were some good gaming podcasts out there that I really liked. And there were some other good sort of geeky podcasts. One of the ones that really inspired me was a show called Raging Bullets, which is a DC Comics review podcast, which I've sadly actually had to stop listening to because it's just so overwhelmingly long. They will go 2 to 4 hours on a weekly show.
Oh, wow.
And I just ran out of time to keep listening to them. I'm like, I really like the reviews format for their podcast, and I really like what they do with it and the in-depth sort of discussions they have about what's going on in there. I really wish I could find something like that that talked about gaming books and D&D specifically, because I wasn't really that into, some of the indie scenes and other products and other games and stuff. I've played a lot of games, and I've played a lot of indie stuff, and I've played, all over the place. But I've always ended up coming back to D&D, and so that's really what I wanted to hear. And I looked, and I couldn't find anything. And so I just sort of got disappointed and whatever. And then I listened to what I was listening to for a few months, and then I checked back again. I'm like, well, it's been a few months. Maybe somebody started something, and there was still nothing. And so after doing that for probably 6 months to a year or so, I finally just said, fine. If nobody's going to do this show, I'm going to do the show. And so I did. I started off just doing reviews. And actually, I'd sort of been, you know, obviously discussing it and debating it and wondering if I was going to do it for a while. And then I read a book that it was a third edition Forgotten Realms book about the Moonsea that made me angry. I didn't like the book, and I'm like, I've got to tell somebody about this, and I'm starting the podcast, which, you know, in hindsight, it sucks that I started the podcast on a negative review, I guess, but
the world must know.
Yeah, that was my idea. Yeah, that people have to know that this is bad. So I'm finally going to start this podcast and get the word out. And so I did, and that's how the Tome Show started.
Nice. How has the show changed over the years?
The show started off as me alone talking into a microphone. I actually started off with just the Mac laptop that was provided to me by my school. That was all my equipment. So I didn't actually pay anything. And I started off with using my podcast hosting service. They offer a free account. So I'm like, well, I'll just try this out. And when I fill it up, I'll have to make a decision. Do I like doing it and start paying for it? Or do I just say, this was a nice experiment, and then move on and get rid of it at that point, you know, cause I could very low barrier to entry at that point. I hadn't paid a single cent to do the whole thing.
Right.
And I had to fidget with whether I would script things or try to be off the cuff or outline. And I've sort of found, over the years, I've found, a sort of in-between that I think works pretty well for me. And I started the show with the idea that there would be little segments. You know, we'd talk about news here, and we'd talk about this here, and we'd do an advice segment here, and we'd talk about that there, and we'd do a review there, and it would just sort of be broken up into four or five different little segments throughout a 30-minute or so show. Because as I've discovered, every podcaster intends to be, we're going to be the short, brief, to-the-point show, and nobody pulls it off. Everybody starts that way. But nobody does it, pulls that off after about 10 episodes.
It's just too much fun after a while.
It does, right. And so, so eventually I decided, you know what, to help me be brief, I'm just going to do one topic. I'm going to do the whole, after about a year, I said, you know what, the whole show is just going to be, every episode is going to be one topic. We're going to pick one thing, and we're just going to talk about that, get in, get out, and get on with it. And so we were doing that. Or I was doing that because I was still mostly alone at that point. I'd sort of put the word out that if anybody was interested in being on, I'd welcome them. And I've had a few people come on, and some of them are still contributors to the show. Some of them have gone off on in other directions, and that's fine. I wish them well, and they've been great. But yeah, so I've added guests over time. I went to a more focused one topic per episode format. Some of that has then evolved again, where I've added in some segments again, like the episode is 90% a review of this product, but we do a little bit of news at the beginning and then some conversations like that as well. So the format there has changed, although I would have to say that probably my biggest change to the show is that I've stopped sucking at it. The first three episodes are not available on the website. That's not necessarily because I'm embarrassed by them. I was actually required to take them down by my host because they're in the M4A format, the enhanced podcast format. And my host said, you know what, you really don't want to be doing that because it limits the number of people that can listen to it. And so they pulled it down for me, and I'm like, well, that was a dumb decision. If I want to do it in that format, I should be able to do it in that format. Forget you. But I went with it anyway. And so those three episodes are available. If somebody wants them, I can point them to them. But I'm not too upset by them being down because I wasn't good on the microphone at all. I was way too nervous about what I was doing, and I didn't speak in a natural voice. And sometimes I was off the cuff and not scripted at all, and it just rambled and was bad. And then sometimes it was completely scripted, and it felt like what it was, me reading off of a piece of paper, off of a screen. So I think the biggest change has been me getting better at it, which has honestly been much easier for me anyway, because it's allowed me to not edit as much. I used to spend a lot of time editing that I don't have to do anymore.
Right. Speaking of which, when we're done with this tonight, that's just podcast is done, right? You'll just put it right up on the web.
Yeah, that's how that happens.
So what else goes into producing an episode of the Tome Show?
The first of all, the file has to be converted to a format that can be used a little bit better because I want to run it through Levelator. I've gone off and on. Sometimes I've run it used Levelator. Sometimes I haven't. When I stop doing it, it makes my production time a bit faster. But eventually we'll have a guest on whose levels are way too loud or way too quiet, and then people complain. So I've just got tired of the complaints, and I've said, you know what, you're right. I should be trying to make every episode as good as possible. So I've started levelating everything. That's usually just throw the file into a program and sit and wait for a while. Once that's done, then I throw it into GarageBand and I go through the editing. I add the music, I add, you know, the occasional sound effects, I add the ads, the shout outs, all that kind of stuff. Occasionally I'll have to edit out, you know, where somebody said something that made them look silly, or you know, I'll have a guest on who said something as a joke, and then they're like, you know, somebody might take offense to that, could you take it out? And so every now and then I'll take that kind of stuff out. Or if there's just long, awkward pauses, which happens every now and then, not because people are long and awkward, but we're recording on Skype or over the phone most of the time, so there's just a lag and you get some pauses. Edit all that out, then upload it to the site, write the show notes, post it. All in all, I estimate that for every minute of podcast that you hear, I've spent probably at least 3 minutes working with that audio.
And help make me sound good, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, I do what I can.
Speaking of me, how are you going to cover my generous salary of Skittles?
Oh, I'm paying you in Skittles now?
Yeah.
I can handle that.
My minions seem to like Skittles better. I don't understand.
Okay. The Tome Show is able to cover your generous salary in a couple of different ways. We started the Amazon store a while back. And by we, I mean I found their affiliate set up, and I'm like, why not? I'll give it a shot. And so you can go through the Tome's Amazon store. And actually, Amazon allows me to set up a store where I can add products and say, here, come and buy this product here, there, and there, or whatever. I think I'm going to just stop doing that and have the link go straight to Amazon. Because as long as it comes from me and it has the little THTO thing in the URL, I get credit for it. So you can just go to Amazon through me and get to products that way and buy anything in the world. And I get between 4% and 6% kickback from that, which isn't much, but it does help me pay for products that I wouldn't normally buy that I'll get through the Amazon store money. So then I can do reviews on them and that kind of thing, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
It helps cover some of the costs of buying almost everything that Watsi puts out or that other companies put out or whatever, which normally I wouldn't do if I wasn't doing the show. And beyond that, we also started working with some other podcasts, and part of the things that we do is we sell sponsorships. I'm actually the lead salesman for the network, selling sponsorships, and that sponsorship money is used to basically cover our costs. We basically pay the domain registration and hosting fees for the company, the podcast and the network. So nobody's really making a profit running this podcast or working with this podcast. You know, I might be able to throw some Skittles your way come Gen Con or something, but I'll have to order them through Amazon. So.
Yeah, I didn't want to make people have to actually think that I was getting paid anything. Yeah. I mean, this is totally out of love.
Right. Well, and like I'm saying, I don't really get paid anything. Although, again, I suppose I get some things through the Amazon store, and I get some review copies from companies every now and then. But for the most part, the things that we're reviewing are things that I've gone out and bought because I had an interest in it and what have you. I have some grand visions of where the show can go if we ever start making any money, like through the Amazon store or whatever, but we're not there, and we haven't been there in 3.5 years. So
you were talking earlier about a network. What network is that?
That is the Vorpal Network. Gamers Haven, Fistful of Comics and Games, and myself, at one point, were all sharing a forum over at Fistful of Comics and Games. They had a forum set up, and they were nice enough to give us the other two of us some space on there. And eventually I just kind of got tired. Basically what happened was I was tired of having to pimp both of their shows every time I did an episode, you know, to saying, okay, and make sure you check out our affiliate or our whatever brother podcast or sister podcast or whatever at fistfulcomicsandgames.com and gamershavenpodcast.com. And I just got tired of doing that whole spiel. So I said, you know, wouldn't it be nicer if we just made a network and then I could just say, go to the Vorpal Network and see them all. And that was sort of the beginnings of my motivation for getting the network going. And then I thought, you know, I've been trying to sell sponsorships. I bet I could do it easier as a network-wide thing than it would be as an individual show. And we already like to collaborate with each other a lot, so this will be a way to sort of solidify that bond and keep us collaborating together. And so the Vorpal Network was born, and over the last year, we've even added a few new shows, and so we're largely a network on the grow.
Nice. So if people want to join, should they talk to you?
I tend to be the go-to person. We've had two shows join in the last year, and I have sponsored both of those shows. And we've had a few other people talk to us here and there about joining, and some of those... Basically, the board of directors, the three of us that run the original three shows, have to make a decision whether or not to give the green light or not. And we've had a few that we've kind of been hesitant about, and we've had some like regular websites come to us and say, you know, hey, we've got a blog or we've got a website or whatever, we'd like to join. It's like, oh, we're not really set up to do that at the moment, but, you know, we can look into being that at some point. So,
okay.
So, yeah, I mean, the Vorpal Network is always looking to grow. You just need to get one of the current members to say, hey, they'd be a good member, and take that up with the rest of us, and then we talk about it and make a decision.
Sweet. And so what advice do you have for people who want to create their own podcast?
Don't do it. Yeah, it's a bad idea.
It'll suck you in.
It sucks you in. It takes away all your time, or you'll be one of those people that pod fade. I think somebody just posted a comment on one of the episodes that I posted about how the Tome Show is the king of D&D podcasts because all the other D&D, at least 4th edition based podcasts, seem to have pod faded or disappeared or gone on hiatus and just never come back. Or, you know, meanwhile, I've been pretty consistent for 3.5 years. I made a promise at the beginning that I would do. I didn't want to say it'd be a weekly show because I knew sometimes I'd be too busy and whatever. So I basically said, I promise that I will put out at least 2 episodes a month. And I have made that promise every single month since I started the show. There's been a few times that it's been, I posted an episode at 11:49 on the last day of the month to get on my second episode of the month. But when I see that end of the month coming, I've made sure to push it and get that last episode out so I could keep that promise. Although I don't know that anybody would notice, but it's been important to me to keep to that. But yeah, podcasting, it doesn't, if you're really interested in it, you can start it off cheap. You can start it off easy, see if you like it, and then get into it or not. But do some research and know what realistic expectations are for a podcast. We do it for fun. We do it for a love of doing it. We don't do it because we're trying to be rich or famous or get free stuff or whatever. If you're trying to do that, you will disappoint yourself.
Okay. So,
how's that?
That sounds great. So all the questions I have for now, I hope those were okay. Did I make my check?
I think you did okay so far. Let's see if you can make your next one, because I think we're done with all the meta talk that we need to hear for the time being. If people want to hear more about the show, then I suppose they can feel free to email in or call up the biz line and we can discuss it in future episodes. But next up, we're going to be looking back at 2010 and what's happened in the last year of D&D. Before we do that, though, we need to give Tracy another chance to show her skills. And normally this is where I would do the sponsor spot. So I'm going to make Tracy do the sponsor spot. Tracy, take it away.
Okay, so our sponsor for this episode is Noble Knight Games. Noble Knight is a brick-and-mortar store that also has a great online presence. They specialize in finding out-of-print products while still offering all of the new products. So I did my pick of the episode. Jeff usually does it, but I did it this time. And I'm picking Hamlet's Hit Points. It's a book by Robin Laws about how to tell a story and how to break it down into bite-sized, he calls them beats, that you can organize to play with the emotions of your players a little bit, to really build suspense and draw drama while not making it go for too long. So that's my pick.
Okay, and that is available from Noble Knight for a little less than $18 right now. That's about a 10% discount off the normal price. So check it out.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it when I read it.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. With a huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
Okay, it is time to look at D&D for the last year. We are going to look back at a few different categories of things. Products that came out in 2010. We're going to talk about different events or discussions that have occurred and seem to take over the community in 2010. And I wanted to share some new things that I've found in 2010 that have set my D&D gaming world on fire. So we'll see if Tracy has some things to add to that as well. Let's start with products. First of all, Tracy's favorite ever D&D book, The Player's Handbook 3, was an early 2010 release, and she loved it, didn't you, Tracy?
Oh, yes. I absolutely loved it. Actually, Worldwide Game Day for that book was the first time I played in public.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
And look at you now. Now you have, like, your best friends with half of the employees at Wizards because of all the play in public stuff you've done with them, right?
Yeah, sure. It's because of all the public play stuff.
Yeah.
And it's nowhere near half of Wizards. But I've been very lucky in making a number of contacts and friends through the public play stuff I've done, through RPGA and just general going to my gaming store and playing.
So you hated Player's Handbook 3, as I understand it. Is that you just don't like Psionics, or what's your problem with it?
I don't hate it. I'm not a big fan of the way the PowerPoint system works in there. I think for people like myself who are still relatively new, I mean, I went from being a player within 6 months being a DM, so I'm still relatively new at the playing side of things. Mm-hmm. I found it a little difficult and complex to play and a little fidgety when it comes to the small little bonuses you get by augmenting, like the small differences between augments. I wish it was a little clearer, but one of my players in my home game, he plays a psionic character, and it's been great for him, so I'm really glad that he has that character to play.
Yeah. Personally, I've always been attracted to psionics ever since second edition. Some of my favorite characters through history have been psionic characters, so Player's Handbook 3 was actually really cool to me, and it showed, I think, how much you can take 4th edition's core mechanics and stretch it and do new and interesting things with it. I really liked it. I also, probably the one class that I'm most excited to play a lot of times, although I've never actually played one, is the Monk, which is just a really cool and fun class because of all the options and cool things it gets to do. But oddly enough, as I recall, my one big criticism of Player's Handbook 3 is that the Monk is awesome, but it is not psionic, you know? And I understand by flavor you could make it psionic and make that work, but it doesn't even follow any of the psionic mechanics. Like, they created a very specific way that psionics works, and the Monk doesn't do any of those. So it's clearly something different, and it's awesome, but it's not psionic.
Right. It's related because he has such great control over his mind and his body through that, but controlling other people and stuff, it's not up on that list.
Well, it's related because they didn't want to end up creating a whole new power source, and that's pretty much the bottom line for it.
Well, right. So,
it was a decision made out of what I feel like is an unfortunate lack of creativity, because they decided not to do that power source. But it is a killer cool class, and I really like the psionic stuff. But the next big hoopla of 2010 was Dark Sun. So we actually had to jump quite a ways. We got Monster Manual 3, which was awesome.
Yeah.
And updated monsters. But that's, you know,
new damage tables.
Yeah. And so that was cool. But then we jumped straight into Dark Sun, which as the next big thing, having not done a DMG 3 this cycle around. And that was Dark Sun was the new big post-apocalyptic setting for D&D. And by new, I mean revived. What was everybody's take on Dark Sun? How did you feel people reacted to Dark Sun?
I think a lot of people liked it, but it was definitely a departure from the way a lot of 4th edition was working up to that point. I mean, having divine characters not be part of a... Like, having things not be part of a setting was very different compared to how how people were getting used to playing 4th edition. There was also the whole thing with D&D Encounters doing the second season as Dark Sun before the books came out, so people couldn't create their own characters. That caused a little bit of controversy as well. Just the brutality of Dark Sun, I think, took some people by surprise. Even I know that it's always been brutal, and that a lot of people created multiple characters because they just assumed their character was going to die, and it's not quite so bad, I think. But for people who had gotten used to a certain feel from 4th edition, it definitely changed it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I sort of felt like that the hoopla leading up to and immediately after Dark Sun was big, and then people sort of set it aside. You know, it hasn't been talked about much since its big debut, you know?
Yeah. I think that's due to unfortunate timing. Essentials came out right afterwards.
Right. I think you're right. I think Essentials sort of stole Dark Sun's thunder. There are some things that we were introduced to in Dark Sun that I feel like should be part of the new core of what D&D is, because I really like the idea of templates.
Yes.
But they haven't done anything with them at all since. Has there been anything? Have there been any new templates in DDI or anything that I've missed?
I don't remember seeing any. That's one thing I hope that they do again, because I really like templates too. And then the other thing that they did in the Dark Sun books, like for the creatures, they explained to DMs how to change creatures from older monster manuals and reskin them as Dark Sun creatures. Mm-hmm. And I hope they do even more of that. I think one of the things that is missing for a fair number of DMs is that knowledge of how to do it. Because it's great to have these monster manuals and these books and everything, but it's impossible to create monsters that are going to be perfect for whatever you're doing at home. And understanding how those things work and how you can change them, I think is a very big part of the game that's missing right now.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's keep moving because we need to go fast. We are already at the 49-minute mark.
Sorry.
So, no, you're fine. And so, like we mentioned, right on the heels of Dark Sun is D&D 4.5.
So, yes, that's a very big controversy as to whether or not it's 4.5. I think it is only in as much as each player's handbook has, and each monster manual has changed a little bit how they design and do things. But overall, I think it still works well together, and you can play Essentials right alongside Essentials characters right alongside other characters. And from the DM side, it hasn't changed at all, other than occasional changes like how magic items get distributed.
Mm. Yeah, and I feel like Chris Hurd from Icosahedrophilia did a really nice job of summarizing this for me on his site, even I think before it came out, just based off of the previews and things, is that Essentials isn't really D&D 4.5. It's really more like D&D 3.95.
Right.
You know, it actually takes it back a little bit to the older school. It's more of an in-between 3rd edition and 4th edition. You know, it almost makes you wonder that if they hadn't done that first, if they wouldn't have had more people convert over to the new system and less people go over to Pathfinder or stay with 3rd edition.
Right.
But I wouldn't have been nearly as excited about it if they had gone.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I would have played or would have kept playing, at least not a rogue. Sorry. but yeah.
Okay. The next big release and the last big release of the year from Wizards was what they call the Dungeons & Dragons Gamma World game, which was a departure for me anyway, because Gamma World had never been discussed as a Dungeons & Dragons game before. But this time it was, because it's built on the 4th edition rule system. And we're going to have an episode about Gamma World when it's all done in a month or so. But how has Gamma World gone?
I think it's gone pretty well. Because of its nature, it allows for quick generation of new characters and also character death. So people can have I call it swinginess, but they can have some pretty hard-hitting monsters and lack of healing, and it's still fine.
Okay. And yeah, Gamma World is a more goofy, sillier one. It's good for a one-shot sort of game. I'll be curious to see once it's all out if the buzz keeps going on it, because right now there's still a lot of people talking about it. There's still a lot of things, new little websites and things coming out dealing with it. I imagine if the buzz continues, then they'll add some more Gamer World to their schedule. But my suspicion is that it'll be a fun little game in the meantime, and it'll go on its way as they start ramping up for the next big announcement, which is Ravenloft, which we'll get to in a bit.
Yeah, I think the other big thing about Gamma World is just that it showed the flexibility of the system, and so it's gotten a lot of people who want to hack at rule sets kind of more interested again in the D&D 4th edition mechanics.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Also in 2010, we still had some third-party publishers doing some 4th edition stuff, still not nearly as many as did back in the day with 3rd edition. But Open Design, Kobold Quarterly, Goodman Games all continued to publish for 4th edition. Were there any other companies publishing for 4th edition in actual print, or is it after them, is it just onto the PDF companies, of which there's still a lot?
I don't know if I remember any other ones.
Okay.
There's not a lot.
No, there's not a lot, and they're going strong. And Open Design and Kobold Quarterly, I think, are able to run that line pretty well because they publish for both Pathfinder and 3rd edition and 4th edition. So we'll see if the market here for third party publishers ever builds back up again. I think I'd like to see some more of that, but it's hard to do.
Right.
Well, let's move on then. Let's talk about some of the discussions and events that happened in 2010, the big things. And I'm going to let you tell us about PAX East because I didn't go.
Well, PAX East was the first year that they did it out here in Boston. And it was my first convention. So I love that convention. I'm going to be going this year. Anytime they have it in Boston, I'll go. I got to meet a lot of people. There was a pretty big turnout for D&D players. Wizards had, and RPGA had their games, and the line was crazy long. It was just great to see. And I think the podcast helped with that a lot. D&D podcast that I listen to. But it was just great to see it, and I think people were amazed by it.
Mm-hmm. And then the other big con for the year was Gen Con, which is always the big con of the year, which was crazy insane, and the first and only time that we've actually met face-to-face.
Right.
And Wizards uses Gen Con every year to make their big announcements about all the stuff that they're going to be doing for the next year. So we learned about all the new box sets, because everything's pretty much a box set this year, it seems, whether it be Essentials or all the other new stuff coming out. We learned about fortune cards, which are all the big discussion and debate now, which I think we'll save for another episode. We learned about the new monster vault coming out. We learned about the new setting of Ravenloft, a new player's option book on shadow-based characters, the new book on the Shadowfell. Am I missing any big products that they discussed at that?
I can't remember any. I unfortunately missed a lot of those seminars.
Oh, new Forgotten Realms book. There's a new Forgotten Realms book, which was actually a big deal to me, because I'm a big Forgotten Realms fan, and they were originally just going to do the three books and then stop, and they've decided to do another one all of a sudden.
Oh, nice.
So, which I haven't heard much about since then. I should check up on that. there's also been changes to the DM Rewards program for people that do organized play. Tell us about that.
For a long time, if you played games at home and registered them, you could get rewards, and they turned that off. It's really more for people who run games in public to give rewards to those people. But that did cause a fair bit of controversy among some of the people online.
Yeah, and I'm not a big organized play person anyway, so that didn't hit me very strong. What did hit me strong was that I launched a new website, and I figure that's probably the biggest story in Dungeons & Dragons in 2010.
Totally is.
The launching of temporaryhitpoints.com, a website just for the 4th edition D&D player. No DM advice mixed in there. It's just for the players out there. And you, I even wrangled you into writing for it.
Yes. I write the player's guide. So far, we've been talking about how to create a character and everything, but I think I'm going to change it up pretty soon.
Well, that's good. You've got an article due this weekend.
Shh.
The other big change that happened right here at the end of the year was that the character builder on D&D Insider went to a web app instead of a downloadable app, which I know is a move that's been highly criticized because I think they basically ended up releasing a product that wasn't done. And I think that's fair. They didn't finish it before they released it. But they are getting there. They're making changes and improvements to it as time goes on. And it should be feature complete compared to the old one soon, we're told. And, you know, personally, I'm a big fan because I can run the character builder on my Mac.
Right. Same here.
And then they also told us that they're going to be putting some of the other tools as web apps as well. The virtual table came out, sort of. It's on closed beta still, I think. They're moving towards in that direction, and I think that holds some huge potential, but right now it's not there, so we'll have to wait and see what happens. Beyond that, I know Twitter raised a lot of interesting conversations over in the D&D world this last year. There was some schmuck who decided to make a big deal about how dungeons were horrible, and that was suddenly splattered all over the internet, this big debate about what if dungeons were worthwhile or not.
Those poor dwarves. They're like, we create these dungeons, they look so nice, and you have to tear them down like this.
Right. So I think it all started with you posting about how you don't like dungeons, and then Mike Shea from Sly Flourish, who's a friend of the show, published his response, and then it just sort of everybody sort of bandwagoned on that on one side or the other, and I think you broke the internet in half of dungeons suck or dungeons are great.
I am known for burning down the interwebs. It's okay. It's one of my dailies.
There was also a tendency for breaking news to come out through Twitter. This year has definitely been the year of D&D on Twitter, I think.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I just spend my day on there all day. When I'm not working.
So yeah, Twitter's been crazy huge for this year in things, and there's been a lot of sort of as things happen, everybody freaks out about it, and Twitter seems to be the place to go these days, rather than just piling on to various forums or what have you.
Yeah, and there's a lot of reading of tea leaves on Twitter.
Yes, Twitter spends a lot of time speculating about what's going to happen based off of what they don't know. Which is, I mean, that's what the internet's for, right?
Well, it's fun, yeah.
Yeah. And then there was a fun hoopla that popped up when Morris from the EN World forums suddenly out of the blue decided he was going to join up with the whole Twitter thing too. And one of the first things he did was, I'm going to start doing Twitter stuff, and I'm going to start doing all these fun things. And first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go and tell everybody who they should be following if they're interested in D&D that's on Twitter. And so he started listing all the designers, and then he started listing some of the bloggers and podcasters, and it became sort of this big thing about who's on and who's not, and why is this person on and why isn't that person on. And as I understand, did you ever make it onto that list, Tracy?
Only indirectly.
How did you do that?
Because he added the 4E blogs, and Mike, way back in the day, added me to that because I asked him to. And so I am on it through there, but... No, I'm not. As far as I know, I'm not cool enough yet. But that is one of my goals, is to be cool enough.
I don't know that he's even updating anymore, is he?
I don't think so.
So any other big events or discussions that happened this year? Besides you burning down the internet and throwing a fit because Morris didn't include you?
I mean, there was a hoopla about the pre-gens being gender, but I mean that conversation comes up often.
Yeah, gender and racial issues in portrayal of D&D characters and things has happened off and on. It's hard to go back on Twitter conversations because the nature of Twitter is that these conversations are pretty ephemeral. You know, they don't stick around.
Right.
You know, so it's hard to think back to 12 months ago what we were talking about on Twitter.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, then let's talk about the last topic, our last look back of 2010, and that's sort of the new things that we found in 2010 that we wanted to share. And I'm going to make you go first because you don't have anything on this list.
Well, lots of stuff was new for me in 2010, but it may not have been new for everyone else.
That's fine. Share it.
Give
me one.
Give you one. I think that's when I finally found out about Critical Hits, to be honest, was pretty early in 2010. Uh-huh. That was a big one for me. Finding out about EN World and the NEs and everything, that was new for me.
weren't you nominated?
I did. I was, yeah, I got honorable mention.
So you found out about the Innies and got an honorable mention in the Innies in the same year.
Yeah.
I hate the Innies. All right.
So wait, there's new BDM's minicast.
Okay, yeah.
That's new this year, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah. He was real steady with it at first, and then it slowed down a little bit. I hope he keeps going with it. One of my big discoveries of this year was Epic Words, which was actually nominated for an Innie, but that's not how I found out about it. I actually stumbled upon it through a random Facebook ad or something. And I'm like, what is this thing? And I checked it out, and I am in love with Epic Words. It's an online campaign tracker, sort of like Obsidian Portal. In fact, I think we're planning an episode to look at both of those websites in the near future. But Epic Words has been great for me. I tried Obsidian Portal a long time ago with my group, and for whatever reason, they just weren't into it. But when I tried Epic Words, they all jumped on. So it's not really that one is better than the other. It's just that my group, for whatever their random tastes were, decided to sign up for one and not for the other. So it worked.
Nice.
And Epic Words, it's great. It does everything I want it to do, but it doesn't have all the extra stuff that I don't need. So it's just perfect for what I want to do with my stuff. And I love that I can schedule my game nights. It's got a calendar program. So I can schedule and say, this is the night of the game, and it emails everybody and tells them, okay, we're playing this weekend, and I don't have to worry about whether or not they stopped by, if they got the email or stopped by the wiki or whatever, because we were doing everything through a wiki before.
Right.
Other than that, I've also, through Twitter, I met Brian Ingard, who runs a blog called Game Crafters, and I really like it. I had never read it before until he talked to me about coming on the show, and all of a sudden I checked it out, and it was good, and I've been following it ever since, and it's consistently really good stuff. And so if you're looking for a new blog to check out, Brian Ingard and Game Crafters, I think .net, I'll have it linked, is a really good blog, and he's got some really good ideas and things to share. He and I seem to be pretty very much on the same page on a lot of things, and so I think that gives it some more appeal to me.
Okay.
And my last big find, and I just sort of ran into this recently, I mean, I've known the person tangentially for a while, but I've started checking out The Weem.
Okay. .com
and his website lately, and he's doing some really cool things there, whether it be funny little images that he puts together or the condition cards that everybody's been talking about lately.
Oh yeah, those are really nice too.
Yeah.
I have three other websites.
Sweet, give them to me.
Okay. So Robert Schwab started blogging.
Yes, he did.
I love his site. So that's one. The other one, two of my friends, Thaddeus and Sam, DM Samuel, they both have sites. This is My Game, which is myrpggame.com, and also RPG Musings. Those are two pretty good sites. Pretty solid. They have a lot of contributors, and they've been coming up with some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. And I suppose we should also mention that there's been a couple of new pretty okay D&D podcasts that have started in 2010 as well.
That's true. 4 Geeks 4 Ye is another podcast I do. I do it with Thaddeus and Sam and Aaron. And I think that's been pretty good. I've been having a lot of fun with that one. And then Newbie DM started an original D&D Redbox game called The Fellowship of the Tweet that we did for a while. And on the off weeks when he couldn't run it, we started just talking because we just love talking to each other so much. And that became the DM Roundtable.
Yeah.
So those are both new podcast this year,
and I am one of the six listeners of the DM Roundtable, so it's growing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's what we have to talk about. We've talked a lot. It's been a much longer episode than originally planned, but we had decided to add in this retrospective of 2010 afterwards. So I think it was fun and worthwhile. We've added a new co-host. I'm going to be adding a new baby. We've added a new contest, and we've looked back at the last year. So I think it's been a pretty good 160 episodes, and I'm looking forward to Tracy being on the next 160.
Sweet.
So we're going to call this episode 161. Tracy wants to thank our sponsor.
Noble Knight Games. Thanks.
And we don't really have a guest on this episode because you're part of the show now.
Woo-hoo.
So I'm going to say thank you one last time, Tracy, and from now on, I'm not thanking you ever again for anything.
Sweet. We'll go back to our normal thing.
Good. You can get a hold of the show by emailing thetomeshow@gmail.com, visit the forums at gamershavenpodcast.com, and of course don't forget to call into the Tome's biz line at 919-BIZ-TOME with your thoughts, questions, or comments for upcoming episodes. Tracy, remind people what they need to do this month to be entered into the contest.
You have to go to the forums and talk about an event from 2010 in D&D that you liked, and then call in with your Gamma World ideas, questions, comments.
That's right, at 919-BIZ-TOME. Don't forget to review the show on iTunes and tell people about it. It helps spread the word. And don't forget to consider checking out the Tome's Amazon store for things discussed on the show and more. Links for things mentioned in the show can be found in the show notes on the website at thetomeshow.com. And this has been episode 161, where we've looked back, forward, and at the present of...
The Tome. I'm on the wall.